Welcome to the Fuqua Show. For the amazing stories, the passions, and lessons of the Team Fuqua community at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. I'm Anandi Rahman, your host for today, and I want to welcome you to today's guest, Kanchan Nabwani, a second-year MBA student here in our class of 2024 who has a compelling story to share with us today about resilience, fighting stereotypes, and breaking the glass ceiling for herself. First of all, thank you so much for joining us today, Kanchan. To kick us off, as a second-year student, how do you feel with only a few weeks left of the MBA journey and with graduation just around the corner?
Thank you, Anandi. I'm really excited to be on your show today. And I feel there's mixed emotions right now. I think, you know, the journey has been one that's allowed me to push myself out of my comfort zone. And so I'm excited for what's to come, but also going to miss everything that we've gone through in the past 2 years.
Great to hear that it's been a great experience and that, you know, you feel like you've grown over the past 2 years. I'm sure admissions will be happy to hear that. So for those of you who don't know Kanchan, let me give a brief introduction. Kanchan Nabwani is a multilingual third culture kid with roots in India, the Caribbean, and Latin America. Before business school, she spent most of her childhood helping her family business with selling furniture. Then she worked in digital marketing and advertising for 2 years after undergrad, and then started her own business where she learned a lot of valuable lessons from both the successes and failures of that business. This past summer, Kanchan interned at YouTube doing marketing analytics. And outside of all of that, she's a recreational kickboxer, loves cooking for her friends, and can often be seen capturing her favorite moments at Fuqua as the unofficial photographer among her friend groups. Kanchan, as a close friend and classmate of yours, I will say you're a great photographer and probably an even better chef. But is there anything else that I missed?
I guess if I were to think about this, something that I'm a little embarrassed about is that I also know, given my diverse cultural background, is I know how to imitate different accents based on different countries that I've lived in and also cultures I've been exposed to.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what's your favorite one?
Oh, my God. I'll have to take a second to think about this, but I think I would say I can imitate the Trinidadian accent, given I grew up in the Caribbean. And
okay, so wait, can we get a little teaser of that?
So I'll say something that I think most people would be able to relate to, and that is in a Trinidadian accent, we would say, on Tuesdays, we love to go to Tav Tuesdays to have a drink.
Wow, that was absolutely incredible. Amazing. Well, let's dive right in. So if you're at Fuqua, you know, it's hard to find a person who doesn't speak highly of Kanchan. She's a great mentor to so many of our classmates, especially our first-year students, through her involvement with AWIB, the Association of Women in Business, her role as a Cole Fellow, and also her leadership role with the Entrepreneurship and Venture Capital Club. Yeah. But today, I want to take our listeners back to the very beginning and walk them through this journey you've had, where through a series of professional and personal challenges, you've developed a strong resilience, a shield against others dictating your path, and a coping mechanism for bouncing back from setbacks and redefining yourself. You grew up on a tiny island called Curaçao in the Caribbean and Suriname, which sits above Brazil. And from your exposure to entrepreneurship from a young age, you have a passion for helping founders, especially empowering female founders. But first, start us off by telling our listeners about your upbringing as an Indian immigrant in the Caribbean, because I think that's pretty unique.
So my family actually moved. So both my mom and dad moved from India to Curaçao. And Curaçao, for those who don't know, it's a small island in the Caribbean with a population of about 150,000 people. So you can imagine anywhere you go, there's a high chance you're going to bump into people that you know. And coming in this environment, I was unique in the sense that I got this label as being this Hindu kid. And yes, I do practice Hinduism and I have jet black hair and brown skin, but this is not how I wanted to really define who I was. Instead, I always thought I'm this UD Curaçao, which translates to a child of Curaçao, because I was born in Curaçao and felt like this was the community that I belonged to. And so it took me some time to really learn to adapt. And having my parents who moved from India, they always wanted to make sure that I could find my right place. So by exposing me both to the Indian culture, but also making sure that I fit into the Caribbean and Curaçao, they made sure that I did was to learn different languages. So when I was at school, I actually learned to speak Papiamento, which is a local dialect of Curaçao and spoken only in the ABC Islands, which is Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao. And I also learned to speak Spanish and Dutch. And I felt like language was an opportunity for me to really immerse myself in the community and speak and communicate to different people and get involved and learn about the culture of being in Curaçao. And I think that helped me gain a sense of belonging in this community and helped me become more appreciated by people around me. And so I thought that was a really powerful tool that I had. And I use language as a way to overcome this label of just being this Hindu kid in this Caribbean community. And I think I have to give credit to my parents also for making sure that, you know, they wanted me to grow up in this diverse environment, sharing both cultures very strongly.
Wow. I mean, first of all, it sounds like Curaçao is this beautiful melting pot of all these different cultures and languages. And sometimes people use language as a way to connect with people in a positive manner. And while that could have been the case for you, it was more of a coping mechanism, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are all the languages you speak and what's your favorite one? If you had to choose.
Well, I guess so. I mentioned already, I know how to speak Papiamento, and I also didn't mention that is a kind of like a mixture of like Portuguese. So when we say, I think some people will know how to say, how are you? In Portuguese, you'll say como va, but in Papiamento, it is actually conta bai. So there's a lot of similarity between these two languages. I also know how to speak Dutch, Spanish, Hindi, and Sindhi, a dialect of an Indian ethnic group.
So talk to us a little bit more about being involved in the family business, because I know that shaped a lot of who you are today.
So as I mentioned, my parents moved from India to Curaçao. And the reason they moved is my dad wanted to start his own business. And it was a wholesale business. But I grew up actually in a family of entrepreneurs and generation of entrepreneurs. So my great-grandfather, he moved to Egypt to start his own company. My grandfather moved to Indonesia to start his own business. And my father moved first to Suriname, and then later to Curaçao to start his own company. And so growing up in a household full of entrepreneurs, everyone coming with such innovative ideas, as a child, I often spent some time after school or during the weekends in my dad's office. I was learning about the products that he sold, a lot of like small items like lunch boxes and things for children. And so for me, that was very entertaining to be almost like in this playground with all these fun items. And on the weekends as well, spent a lot of time learning a lot about what it's like to be an entrepreneur. And I saw that there was not really a holiday. My dad wouldn't take time off. And if there was a holiday, he was still thinking about things that were for his business, because he knew that is at the end of the day, something that he always went back to.
It sounds like that was probably the pre-MBA to the MBA.
Clearly.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a very interesting experience. How do you think, you know, being exposed to the family business, spending so much time seeing the products, maybe learning from your dad, the rest of the family, how do you think that shaped your business skills today and maybe your approach to entrepreneurship?
I think one thing that I saw is that being an entrepreneur requires a lot of dedication. And as I mentioned, there's no time to take a step back or even take a holiday. And I'm not vouching that we should be workaholics, but at the same time, I think you need to be fully invested in what you do. And you can only do that if you enjoy what you're doing. And I saw that my dad had a lot of passion for what he was doing. And so it taught me as an entrepreneur that you need to enjoy what you're doing. Curaçao is also not a very economically stable economy. And so being in an environment like that and having a business, you not only need to have your plan B ready because there's a lot of volatility in the market, but you also need to understand how the local culture is. Because in order to operate business in any country, you need to understand how to do business with the people. And one thing I saw that my dad did was fostering these relationships with people in Curaçao and building those connections. And so today, I think that's given me this idea of working hard, this opportunity to also constantly think about what's next, be more open-minded, and we have to be ready to pivot from one idea to the next in a very quick manner.
And so do you think getting exposed to all those valuable lessons has allowed you to be somebody who takes more risks than others?
I think in some ways I'm risk averse, but I think I take calculated risks. So I usually like to take the time to evaluate what the situation is, understand the situation I'm getting into, and then think about, is it worth me pushing forward? And most of the time, I don't like to give up. And one thing that I've learned is the worst that is going to happen is either someone will say no, whether it's in a business idea, or you'll get a rejection to your idea, or you might not get the funding you need or the audience you need. But that doesn't mean it was bad. It's just that it's an opportunity for you to take a step back, rethink, evaluate, and see what else you can do to push forward.
So I'm curious, what's the biggest risk you've taken and has that paid off?
I guess the biggest risk I would say is starting my own company. I was 25 years old and I started my business with my brother. I had gone through a couple of moves already. So I had done my undergrad in Boston, then spent some time in Suriname, helping with my family business and learning a little bit more about that furniture space. And then starting my own business, I realized that this is a risk that I'm taking because I'm not going through that traditional career path, but instead I'm going to pitch an idea in the US of a mattress. Essentially, that was the company that I started. And I wanted to see whether people would really buy into a high quality product. And it was intimidating at that time, but I think it's taught me a lot of lessons.
So wait, tell us more about this business because that's super interesting. What was it called? Why did you go for the mattress product? Why did you look into high-end mattress? Tell us all about it.
Yes. So the mattress company that we started is called Drumi, and Drumi means to sleep in Papiamento. And the reason we started this company is because my family, as I mentioned, has been in the furniture space and they've been in this industry for over 20 years. And so one of the products that we sell in Suriname is mattresses as well. So I've kind of got exposure to what different types of mattresses look like and wanted to find a way how I could bring some of that business idea from Suriname to the US. And the reason why I decided to call this product Drumi is because I wanted to find also a way to tell my story in the business I was starting. It was a high-end mattress that was made with plastic from the oceans, and that was on the outer cover. And we used a coral piping because that was resonating with us protecting the coral reefs for every product that we sold. But our entire story was focused on protecting the oceans, reducing plastic waste, and finding a way to tell this unique experience that my brother and I went through into the product that we were selling.
Why the passion for wanting to make an impact on the ocean and save these coral reefs?
Yeah, so growing up in the Caribbean, I was surrounded, if you can just picture this, Curaçao is an island that sits around blue waters. It's like crystal clear blue waters that changes in different colors. So from light blue all the way to the darkest blue that you can imagine. And when you go and swim and snorkel or even scuba dive and you see what's the destruction that is happening in the oceans, it's quite sad to see that our coral reefs are slowly dying. And a lot of people, when they told us, when we were consulting them for our business, they said that people don't only buy for your product, but they also buy for the story. And so what is this unique story that you can offer that customers will feel enticed to buy your product? And when thinking about all these ideas and knowing that we have coral reefs that are being impacted, my brother and I thought, why don't we create a product that really resonates with our home country and will protect the oceans?
Wow, I love that. A unique product that also has a way of giving back to your roots and where you come from and also helping the environment. I want to go back to something that you said a little bit earlier of why you started Drumi. So you mentioned that that was a way for you to establish something of your own. Did you ever feel like you had to fight any cultural norms or expectations around gender roles when it came to being a South Asian female founder?
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that because as I mentioned, when I was growing up in Curaçao, I had this label of being that Hindu kid. And I used language in order to overcome that label. When I started my own company, I thought I could define my own label. as this entrepreneur, this innovator. But in fact, growing up also in a South Asian community where there are certain stereotypes about women starting their own business, a lot of people, when I would go back home, would ask me, how are things going with your brother's company? Mm-hmm. Rather than saying, how are things going with your company? So I was not acknowledged as this founder, but instead just as someone supporting a business that was run by my family. But I didn't take this label, once again, as a setback. But in fact, I took this as another challenge that I wanted to overcome. And in fact, I wanted to prove that this was a joint venture between the two of us. And so really took on challenging opportunities within the business. And one of the things that my brother and I both did was actually, we were on another podcast where we spoke about our product and we told our listeners about our story. And that to me was a way to showcase that this is a joint venture between the two of us.
That's really interesting. I'm sure there are a lot of our listeners will be able to relate to the struggles of being a founder, but also maybe being a female founder, a minority founder, often challenges that others face. I'm curious, how supportive was the rest of your family when you talked about starting your own business with your brother?
So my family was actually very, very supportive. My dad really wanted my brother and I to do something of our own. So even though we had the family business in Suriname, he thought this would be the best learning opportunity that we could have. And so he served as our mentor. And he always said that because the two of us are involved in the business, his role was more to just advise us. And so it was funny because when you're living and working with the same people, he had to set some ground rules and say from 9 to 5, I'm your mentor and your boss. And after that, at 5 o'clock, I had turned into your father. And so that was very interesting to grow up in that environment. But I think it helped us a lot. And having that motivation really helped push us to continue to, you know, overcome the challenges that we had with our business, given that it was such a competitive market. We were also starting a company that my family has never started in the US. And we were targeting a very niche audience because this was a more high-end product. So we were not going after a big part of the audience, say, as your bed-in-a-box companies that you might be familiar with.
Well, you know, as they say, never start business with family, but you definitely took that risk. And power to you for doing that. So I know you've shared with us that that business has now closed down. Talk to us about why that happened and what you learned from essentially some of those failures.
Yeah, so the reason, so we were running this business almost for 3 to 4 years. And what we noticed when operating our business was that even though the product was of high quality, we had a strong story, we lacked a little bit from the marketing side. And the competitors that were in the space had a lot of marketing budget that we could not compete with. And so in the US, what we've learned is that customers are really buying into what other people tell them. And so when you have that marketing budget and those testimonials and all these ads that are bombarding customers that this is the mattress that's best for your back. And if you're a side sleeper or a stomach sleeper, or even if you have athletes like Tom Brady supporting certain products, you are going to buy into that more than just a mattress founded by a brother-sister duo. And so it was too competitive a market that we had challenged actually breaking into. And so that's where we decided that we've tried our best. We've even launched bed sheets. Even though the bed sheets were more successful than the mattress, it was better from a business standpoint to shut it down. And what we learned is that as an entrepreneur, you have to be ready to make that decision. Because if you're so emotionally attached to your company and don't make that decision, you're just going to be going into losses. And that's also not healthy.
Yeah. As they often say, like your business is like your baby, right? So founders get very attached to their idea and obviously believe in it. But the tough part is getting the rest of the world to believe in it. How did you handle pressure and criticisms from the community, family and friends and peers? How did you handle any of that?
I think this time we approached it more because the transition was not a sudden shutdown. It was more of a gradual progress of us trying to sell off our inventory. So we started off by first like closing our website, then moving some inventory to Amazon, and then slowly selling it off. And then I actually transitioned into business school and my brother transitioned to go back to Suriname and help the family business, that sense of pressure wasn't as strong as if we just shut down and then we're kind of in a moment where we didn't know what was going to happen next. So because we both had our backup plan and our idea, or not even a backup plan, but we knew what was coming next for us, I think it was a little easier.
So you mentioned then moving on to business school, where we are right now, of course. Are you working on your next business, or what are you doing right now?
So after going through this whole experience of starting my own company, when I applied to business school, I thought, you know, maybe I would take some knowledge that I gain here at Fuqua to find a way to maybe revitalize the company. But as I was here in business school, I actually didn't want to block myself from anything. So in fact, I'm not into entrepreneurship, but instead I am exploring. I took the time to explore different opportunities in business school, and I'm very, very glad that I did that.
That's amazing. So talk to us about some of those opportunities and how business school has been for you.
I think business school has given me the opportunity to define my label as now this leader, someone who is willing to take on new risks, and a person who's coming from a more optimistic and positive mindset and who wants to become a marketing and analytics professional. And I think opportunities within the different leadership roles that I've had have allowed me to redefine these labels and shape who I am today.
So how do you think your previous entrepreneurship experiences have shaped the kind of leader you are now?
So I think my entrepreneurship experience has taught me how to not give up and how to be very courageous and open. Our first year, it was a very challenging recruiting process. But I was one of those students that always stayed positive during this time period and knew that at the end of the day, something is going to work out, even if it took a little bit extra time. And so I would show up to all my classes. I made sure I was present in different social events. I was there to support my friends, but I was also making sure that I took care of myself and knew what were my goals that I wanted to achieve and didn't give up on those. And I think coming from that background has really helped me gain that ability to do that.
I think I've also seen this firsthand from, you know, being a friend and classmate. You're always extremely brave. You always have this amazing energy, no matter what's going on in your personal or professional life. How do you do it?
So it is a challenge sometimes, but I think a big part is my family. So I do talk a lot about my family, but one thing that I didn't share, or maybe a lot of people might not know, is when I started business school, I actually lost my father in the first week of our program. And that was a time where I thought I might not be able to continue to be here at Fuqua. But I realized that this is not what he would have wanted. My father has always been someone who supported me. He's always served as a mentor to me. And I needed to find a way now how I could use all the skill sets that he's taught me over the years to keep pushing myself to do what I have come here for and to achieve the goals that I wanted to. And so I think this whole experience of my past and also my family and entrepreneurship has allowed me to do just that.
Thank you for, you know, sharing that personal story. I know you shared this with me before as we're friends, and I can only imagine how extremely tough that time period was and how it might still be tough today. So really appreciate you sharing that. And I think from everything that you're sharing about your father, you know, it sounds like he was one of your biggest cheerleaders and he's had a huge impact on you. So it's amazing to see that you're trying to continue his legacy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what I have to give him credit for is he didn't discriminate between my brother and myself. So any opportunity that I wanted to pursue, he was open for me to do that. And I think that is something that maybe a lot of people don't get the opportunity for. And, you know, coming from Curaçao and Suriname, I don't know if we even have a student here who has graduated from Fuqua from those two different regions. So it's really a huge opportunity for me to be here. And obviously it's something that I don't take for granted because it's my parents who have, you know, shaped who I am, but they've also sacrificed a lot moving all the way from India to a new foreign country with different languages, different culture, but still making sure that we receive the upbringing, the education, and the work experience that we needed in order to make it so far.
Yeah, and I think this is honestly one of the beauties of the show is that we're in a lucky position to be able to share the stories of classmates like yours that can really help inspire somebody else, you know, somebody from across the world who in a country where they feel like maybe they're not well represented in business schools may just now want to take that leap of faith and go for it. So I hope this, you know, reaches as many people as possible. And thank you for inspiring and sharing all your stories. So now reflecting on your entire journey where you felt like you've had to redefine these labels that others have put on you, right? Essentially people putting these restrictions on your potential, telling you how far you can go, but you've constantly broken those down, right? After all these different experiences and constantly rebuilding yourself, what do you think is now your brand?
So I think if I were to define, so this is a great question. And, you know, as a marketer, I should probably know how to brand myself. And that's usually the thing that we're probably the worst at, is talking about ourselves. And I hate doing that. And also, if you know, I don't really talk about my achievements or anything that I've done, because that's just not who I am. So my personal brand would be, if I were to just define it in maybe three words, I would say I try to stay humble with everything that I've done. I'm always positive. And I think, you know, that's just been a way for me to keep moving forward. And I think I'm also very optimistic. I've been in environments where people have told me that things are not possible, but I've found ways to ignore the noise or block the noise and learned that if I put my effort in doing something, I will be able to do it. And so having that optimistic, positive, and humble attitude has helped me make it so far. And I hope, you know, that same attitude keeps pushing me forward.
I hope you write a self-help book because I'll be one of the first ones to read it. Okay, Gunjan. So before we wrap up today, if your father was listening to this episode, what would be a message to him that you would want to share?
So I think this is a little difficult, mm-hmm. but I will share. The first thing I would say is obviously thank you, that I've been able to achieve so much because of your support, your guidance, and you always taking the time to be there for us throughout our journey. And where I am today, I have to give a lot of credit to you. And I'll always make sure that I make you proud with whatever I do and always continue to use your spirit of positivity, your sarcasm, your sense of humor, and your grounded attitude with whatever I do in the future.
Wow, that was beautiful. I'm sure he was always very proud of you and the rest of your family is as well. Well, Gunjan, thank you so much for sharing so many beautiful stories about your family, your upbringing, and your backgrounds, and for sharing so many lessons with us today. I also want to thank you for being so vulnerable about talking about all the different personal and professional challenges you've had, which have really shaped you into this amazing, confident, brave, and ambitious soul. I wish you the best of luck with wrapping up this term. I hope you make some amazing final memories in the last few weeks here at Duke. And I can't wait to see how you change the world with all your passions moving forward.
It's been really a pleasure to talk to you and tell my story and share my story with you. Thank you for asking me such deep questions that sometimes I don't take the time to think about. So I appreciate being on this episode with you and thank you.
Thank you. An absolute honor.